This is the Indicator from Planet Money. I'm Paddy Hirsch. And today's indicator is 15.3%. That was the average debt-to-income ratio of the American household in the third quarter of last year, according to the Federal Reserve. And that is close to an all-time low. It's certainly a huge improvement on where we were in 2007, prior to the financial crisis. And yet, the data shows that we're not reducing our debt overall. We're actually borrowing more for things like student loans, rent, and car payments. How that squares for American households is kind of a mystery. So I called a friend.
Christopher Thornburg, founding partner, Beacon Economics.
Today on The Indicator, how debt is changing in the US and what that means for American households.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, Intuit. Intuit's products, QuickBooks, TurboTax, and Mint, help you effortlessly manage your finances so you can live your life the way you want. Learn more at Intuit.com. Intuit, powering prosperity. Support also comes from ADT. America's trusted home security company can help protect you against break-ins, fires, and carbon monoxide. 24/7 emergency response when you need it most. More at ADT.com.
So, Chris, this mystery about American household debt comes from a research note from the investment management firm CJ Lawrence. It says the total amount of consumer debt on U.S. household balance sheets is rising steadily, but the overall health of American households seems to be better despite that. Can you explain that to me?
Well, there's a couple of things to keep in mind here. First of all, while debt levels are rising, it's also the case that incomes are rising. And really what you're looking at there, of course, is a ratio of household debt to household disposable income. And yes, there's little doubt that that number has actually been falling. In fact, it's been falling pretty consistently since about, 2007. Now, the big declines there, of course, were from 2007 to 2011. That was the big deleveraging when all the foreclosures were happening and people were being forced out of their homes. And, of course, much of that debt was being canceled. But since everything steadied in about 2012, basically on a year-to-year basis, incomes have been rising a little bit more than debt. And as such, the overall debt levels have been falling.
So when did we start to see household debt start to rise again? When do people start borrowing again?
About 2012 is when you started to see the aggregate numbers start to drift back up again.
All right. And we've seen that sort of rising pretty steadily since then.
But very slowly. I mean, we're talking 4% per year, 5% per year. Much of the slowness, by the way, can be attributed to mortgage debt. Mortgage debt was a big source of all that new debt that came online prior to the Great Recession. Dodd-Frank's put a lot of additional controls on the ability to borrow mortgage debt. And today, our mortgage market has been growing, candidly, over the last few years, slower than overall home price growth. So not only are people's balance sheets recovering, you know, relative to income, but if you look at, for example, the debt-to-equity ratio in the housing market, we are back to where we were, say, in 2001, 2002, before the big borrowing surge occurred.
All right, so we're looking pretty healthy right now in that respect.
Absolutely.
But we are seeing households borrowing more, even though that is, you know, a relatively low, relatively slow rate. Is that healthy? Is that a good thing?
Sure, why not? Look, there's nothing wrong with debt as long as the debt you're borrowing is debt that's going to the right things, right? The ability to maybe buy a car or go to college or buy a house without debt is extremely limited. People just don't have that kind of money sitting in their checking account. So the ability to access credit markets is a positive thing on those fronts. If you go back to, say, 2005, what was happening then was not healthy because people were taking on debt, but they weren't necessarily using it, shall we say, to buy that dream home. In a lot of cases, they were taking money out of their existing home and simply using it to go out and buy toys, buy fancy cars or giant flat-screen TVs or boats and things like that. That's extremely unhealthy kind of borrowing. So what you do with the money determines whether or not debt is good or bad.
Okay, so today Americans are taking on less mortgage debt, but borrowing more to pay for consumer items, including college education and cars and stuff like that, which means our financial obligation, the amount that we owe, is still considerable. Now, you write a lot in your research about the financial obligation ratio. What is that, and why is it important?
So the Federal Reserve does, on a quarterly basis, an estimate of not so much the debt levels for American households, but the debt burden of American households. It doesn't necessarily
What's the distinction?
That's a good question. What matters more, how much mortgage debt you have or how much your mortgage costs you on a monthly basis? You could have a $500,000 loan at 10% per year, or you can have a $1 million loan at 4% per year. Well, guess which one is actually less burdensome? Well, of course, the answer is the larger loan at the lower interest rate. Now, of course, we also have to remember that some households have obligations which aren't necessarily quote-unquote debt-related, but you have to think of them that way. So, for example, if you own a home, you have a mortgage. But if you're a renter, your rental payment is kind of the same thing as a mortgage. It's a payment you have to make. It's an obligation if you want to have a roof over your head. So they also include things like rent as well as mortgage being paid. So the financial obligation ratio is basically an estimate of all those financial obligations, rent, mortgage payment, student loan payment, car payment, all those sort of things as a percent of your disposable income. Well, given the fact that credit markets have been relatively constrained, given the decline in interest rates we've seen over the course of the last 20 years, the financial obligations ratio, what your average American household is paying, is at an all-time record low level, never been lower than it is, and they started collecting this data in 1982.
Wow.
Yeah.
How does that happen?
Well, again, low interest rates and not a lot of borrowing going on, particularly in the mortgage markets. Mortgage markets have been functionally flat since 2012. There's been very little accumulation of mortgage debt. What has actually filtered into the system, the growth of the outstanding debt, has been actually surpassed by the growth in prices. In other words, the gross value of American real estate.
But a lot of people might say, you know, we're seeing American households borrowing more. Okay, so they're not borrowing at the rate they were, you know, in the mid-2000s. But shouldn't we be saving more? Shouldn't we be socking that money away?
Well, believe it or not, savings rates look pretty good right now, too. If you look at the BEA version of...
BEA is...
The Bureau of Economic Analysis, excuse me for being wonky. They put together, of course, an annual or quarterly estimate of income and spending. According to the BEA, right now the savings rate is running between 6 and 7% of disposable income. To put that in context, it was running between 5 and 6% about 15 years ago, prior to the big run-up, prior to the Great Recession, where it dropped way below that number. Now, one could argue that we should be saving more. I mean, after all, the federal government has made promises to Americans regarding Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid that, candidly, they're not going to be able to meet. It's as simple as that. But people tend not to be that, shall we say, fiscally logical. Relative to what they think the reality is, the numbers are decent.
Okay, so you're saying that we are seeing household debt rising, although not too badly. We're seeing the savings rate returning to a good, a relatively healthy level. Spending is not crazy. It's not, you know, off the charts, and people seem to be spending in the right way as opposed to the wrong way as they were back in the mid-2000s. And incomes are rising as well. Are there any clouds in this scenario?
You know, not as much as people think.
But economics is supposed to be the dismal science, Chris. You don't sound very dismal to me.
No. The idea that it's, quote-unquote, the dismal science is driven by the idea that we're quite fond of telling people that their cherished ideas won't work nearly as well as they think. On the other hand, I can also tell you that in a lot of cases, economists will tell you that your cherished crises aren't nearly as bad as you think either.
Okay. Chris Thornburg, thank you very much.
Just saying.
This episode was produced by Willa Rubin. The Indicator is a production of NPR.
What's unique about the human experience, and what do we all have in common? I'm Guy Raz. Every week on TED Radio Hour, we go on a journey through the big ideas, emotions, and discoveries that fill all of us with wonder. Find it on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.